Mike Fleming, oh, how I have missed you. So good to have him back. I heard some whispers this morning, so let me just go ahead and address it. I know you look around and the place looks kind of empty. Just so you know, historically, the Sunday that falls on the July 4th Independence Day holiday is the least attended Sunday of the church calendar. Just so you know, that's where they are. They'll be back next week. Don't let it bother you. So just wanted to say that up front. All right, if you got your Bibles, go ahead and grab those. Turn to 2 Timothy chapter 2. We're going to be in 2 Timothy chapter 2 this morning. I'm going to spend most of our time with just two verses, verses 20 and 21. And so I thought we would just read those verses up front so we can just start to talk about them. Verses 20 and 21 are where Paul really seems to slow down in this passage. The surrounding verses are things that he has talked about multiple times throughout these letters to Timothy. He's giving him instructions. He's coaching him on how to handle certain situations and why he should avoid other situations. And then right here in the middle, he draws him a picture, which I appreciate. I like pictures. So let's read about the picture. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 20 and 21. Paul writes, "Now in a great house, there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but also of wood and clay, some for honorable use, some for dishonorable. Therefore, if anyone cleanses himself from what is dishonorable, he will be a vessel for honorable use, set apart as holy, useful to the master of the house, ready for every good work." So let's talk about the house. Paul says it's a great house. So what house is he talking about? Is he talking about heaven? No, it's not heaven. There's nothing dishonorable in heaven, not in form or function. Paul's talking about the church. He's talking about the visible household of God as it exists in the world. Not some ideal, this is what a church should look like, church. He's talking about the church as it actually is. And Paul describes it as a great house. Jesus' church, despite all of her shortcomings, is great because the one she belongs to is great. Amen? The work she's been given to do is great. The price that was paid to redeem her was great. So Paul referring to her as a great house is in no way an exaggeration. And in this great house are vessels of gold and silver, vessels of wood and clay, some for honorable use, some for dishonorable. I think even us modern folks can relate to Paul's illustration, because in our houses, a lot of us have like the dinnerware that we use every day. You know, those mismatched bowls and plates and plastic souvenir cups from Dollywood that we just keep washing and reusing because they do hold a lot more than a regular glass. But then we got the stuff we pull out when company comes over, right? I remember when Lori and I were getting married, we did the gift registry thing, and Lori picked out a china pattern because that's just what you did back then. Do you still do that? Did y'all do that? No. Okay. Well, the church we were at was very traditional, very conservative, and so there was a group of just these sweet older ladies in that church who just lost their minds, y'all. We didn't just get plates and bowls and glasses. We got gravy boats and canister sets. We got something you put cream in so you could pour the cream in your coffee. And y'all, my family's from Good Hope, Georgia, okay? Cream to us was milk. And you just pour it right out of the jug. I mean, why would you want to dirty something up just to put milk in your coffee? That didn't make any sense. So Lori and I, we got all this stuff. I don't even know what half of it was called. But what I did know was it stayed in the cabinet. If I was making a sandwich, Lori better not catch me using her good dishes to make a sandwich. I better put it on a paper plate because that's not what her good dishes were for. They were special plates, not common plates. They were for special use, not common use. Remember last week when we talked about Paul's understanding of election and salvation being informed by the Old Testament? Well, it's the same thing here. Paul comes from a heritage of certain things being set apart as holy. set apart as things only used in service to the God of heaven. When God told Moses to build a tabernacle where his presence could dwell with his people, he gave him very detailed instructions on how to build the tabernacle. He told him what furniture to build and how to build it. He told him what tools to make and how to make them. Moses made spoons and bowls and meat forks and fire pans. He made pitchers and plates, and all of it had to be made a certain way with certain materials because it was all going to be set apart as holy in service to the God of heaven. Every vessel and tool had a name, like Lori's china. It had a particular function. It had a specific way it had to be packed up when it was being transported. And it had a certain clan from the tribe of Levi assigned to carry it. Now, we might think that all seems like a bit much, but God needed to change the way these people looked at the world. And He started with the way they looked at themselves. They were His people. A people set apart for relationship with Him and in service to Him. And He began that shift in their thinking with the tabernacle. Someone could walk up to Moses and go, "Hey Moses, what does God mean when He says He wants us to be holy? Well, you see that gold pitcher on the table just inside the tent of the holy place? Yeah? Well, that pitcher, would you put your grape Kool-Aid in that pitcher? No, sir. That pitcher has been set apart. It has a special purpose." And Moses would say, "Well, that's what He means. When God says that you're holy, that's what He means. You have been set apart for Him. And because of that, your life has a special purpose, just like that gold pitcher." So y'all, when Paul writes what he writes in verse 21 about being set apart as holy, Timothy is for sure picking up what he's putting down. There are the ordinary things, and then there's you. There are the ordinary things, and then there's you. And I'm not sure if you noticed, but Timothy is not the only person that Paul's applying that to. Verse 21 says, "Therefore, if anyone cleanses himself from what is dishonorable, he will be a vessel for honorable use, set apart as holy, useful to the master of the house, ready for every good work." As groovy a dude as Timothy is, he is no different than any of us. But Mike, he's a pastor. Like I said, he is no different than any of us. Pastors are no different than any of you. They just have a different calling on their life as it relates to the local church. That's it. We elevate them to a position they do not deserve to be elevated to. Paul says if anyone, not any pastor, not any clergy, if anyone cleanses himself from what's dishonorable, he will be an honorable vessel set apart as holy. Which, again, is the same principle that God applied to the tabernacle vessels. I love God's consistency. If you know your Old Testament, you remember how King Solomon built a temple for God's presence to dwell in, right? Well, the Holy Temple was just a bigger, grander version of the Holy Tabernacle. And when Solomon dedicated the temple, he had all the tools and the vessels from the tabernacle brought over. Sure, he made more because Solomon just can't help himself. But a lot of those original vessels were used in the Holy Temple. Now, why is that important? Because when Babylon's army invaded Jerusalem and they took all those people back with them to Babylon, you know, folks like Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego, well, the army went back again and they destroyed the holy city and the Holy Temple. But they took a bunch of the holy vessels from the temple back to Babylon. They stored most of them in the treasuries that belonged to their gods. So that made the holy vessels unholy. It made them unclean. It made them dishonorable. Not only that, they used some of them in their dirty little pagan god parties and banquets. There's a story in Daniel 5 about a king that came after Nebuchadnezzar. His name was Belshazzar. It's a great name. Well, Belshazzar was hosting one of those dirty little pagan god parties, And he called for the temple vessels to be brought out and used at this party. And they filled some of the cups with wine, and they made toast to their dirty little pagan gods with the holy vessels. Well, after that, the God of heaven was like, all right. And that same night, this handwriting appeared on the wall. It's a great story. If you haven't read it, you really need to. And that same night, homeboy died. Because the vessels of God are not to be put to dishonorable use. Their consecration matters. They are set apart. Fast forward in time, the Persians conquered the Babylonians. I know y'all love this kind of stuff. The Persians conquered the Babylonians, and King Cyrus of Persia lets the Jews go back home. But before he does, he gives them all the vessels taken from the house of the Lord that Nebuchadnezzar had taken. And he treats the vessels with reverence, y'all. He has them brought out. He counts them by name. 5,400 vessels of gold and silver listed and cataloged. This is all in Ezra chapter 1 if you want to read about it. And these vessels that had been stored in a foreign treasury and put to dishonorable use were restored to the purpose for which they were made, honorable and holy. This is the backstory to what Paul is writing in verses 20 and 21. A vessel can sit in Babylon for decades and still be returned to the house of God. People who've been running from God for decades, who have chased sin and followed demons into darkness, can still be returned to the house of God. If we don't believe that, I don't know why we're here. We could have taken a long holiday like other people. We do this because we know, because hopefully we have experienced, that categories are not permanent, because restoration is real. Restoration is at the heart of the gospel message. It is the mystery of godliness that Paul wants us to ponder. Not that there is a mystery, but that we've been brought into the mystery. When we ponder the mystery, we ponder it from the inside, because categories are not permanent and restoration is real. If you have been praying for a dishonorable vessel to one day become a vessel for honorable use, don't ever stop praying for them, okay? Do not ever stop praying for them until they cleanse themselves from what is dishonorable and become useful to the master of the house, ready for every good work. Don't ever stop praying for them. Those temple vessels sat in Babylon's treasuries for 70 years, y'all. 70 years in the wrong house, being used for the wrong things, and they were returned to the house of God and to the purpose for which they were made. So don't ever stop praying. You hear me? After all this talk about cleansing, Paul does something very helpful. He tells us what that cleansing looks like. In verse 22, he tells Timothy to flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. So he tells Timothy two things: flee and pursue. We talked about this a few weeks ago, I think. It's not enough just to flee. We also have to pursue. If we empty our minds of lesser things, but we don't pursue the greater things, usually what happens is another lesser thing moves into that space. Godliness and being a vessel of honorable use are intentional, y'all. And Paul says we need help if we're going to flee and pursue. He tells Timothy to flee those passions and pursue those greater things along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. Part of remaining a vessel for honorable use is carefully choosing who you let into your circle. And your circle should be small. Jesus' circle was small. Sure, he had all those folks who would follow him from town to town, and I'm sure he was familiar with a lot of them. But then he had the 12, and inside the 12, he had the 3. Peter, James, and John. Not that Jesus needed their help, but I think he was showing us the best way to do life. Which really makes sense when you think about it that way, because we can't just let everybody in, right? We don't have the bandwidth to handle a ton of different people. Back in the 90s, a British anthropologist named Robin Dunbar determined that most of us can handle about 100 different stable social relationships. These are relationships where you know who each person is and how each person relates to every other person. Dunbar explained it as the folks you would not be embarrassed to sit and have a cup of coffee with if you bumped into them at a Starbucks. But as relationships become more meaningful and more intimate, that number drops dramatically. Close friends, these are the folks you'd invite over for a dinner party. People who are part of your life, but the relationship doesn't require a ton of maintenance. That's about 15 people, according to Dunbar. But that inner circle, your closest friends and family, the first ones you call when you've got really good news, and certainly the first ones you call when you have really bad news, it's 5 people. 5. And of course, these are average numbers. Some of you social butterflies, you can handle more. Folks like me, who as a general rule don't like people at all, the numbers are even smaller. You see, Dunbar just proved through scientific observation what Jesus showed us about healthy relationship structures. Investing your time and your energy in those 5 to 15 people is much more beneficial for you and for them than trying to accommodate 100 different folks. And those 5 to 15 folks are the ones Paul wants Timothy fleeing and pursuing with. I've said it 100 times, and I'll keep saying it as long as I'm here. Just because someone is good to you does not mean they are good for you. Your core circle needs to be made up of folks who are good for you. Folks who help you flee the lesser things and help you pursue the greater things. Now, they can also be good to you as well as for you. That's a bonus. Consider yourself doubly blessed. But honorable vessels need the support of other honorable vessels if they're going to flee and pursue. We cannot expect someone who is not following Jesus, who is not trying to learn from Jesus, to help us become what Jesus wants us to be. That doesn't make any sense. And if becoming what Jesus wants me to be is not super important to me, well, I'm not an honorable vessel. I'm sorry, I'm just not. If I'm not willing to surround myself with folks who can help me flee and pursue, I'm not really trying to be an honorable vessel, am I? If I'm not willing to push the other dishonorable vessels out of the circle, you still maintain the relationships, I'm not saying that, but you keep them outside the circle, then I'm not sure how I will ever be set apart as holy, useful to the master of the house, ready for every good work. A lot of times, becoming what Jesus wants us to be is less about what we're willing to take on and more about what we're willing to give up or who we're willing to push out. I'm going to stop there because today is Communion Sunday here at Legacy, and you don't have to be a member of Legacy to participate in communion, but you do need to be a Christian. We practice open communion here. If you are not a follower of Jesus, the Lord's Supper, Holy Communion, has no meaning for you. And plus, Paul warns us about taking communion in an unworthy manner, right? So please, we're going to have a video that's going to play. Take as much time as you need to ask the Holy Spirit to show you anything in your life that He doesn't like. And when you have squared those things, if He releases you to do so, please come to Jesus' table and partake of the Lord's Supper.